Welcome to another episode of The Neon Cauldron. It's been a while. So much has happened in my life, and if you haven't been listening up till now, I bet you do not give a shit. So I'm just going to be brief and give you some trigger warnings. Sexual assault, smoking, profanity. I can't think of everything, but basically, if you don't like the sound of my voice or my vibe, just turn around now because it doesn't get better. And I would like to introduce the Minor Arcana to the Neon Cauldron process, and I'll let you listen for yourself. Okay, so my heart is racing and I'm sitting in my car and I didn't get a special mic or anything, which is one hell of a comeback video, right? What the fuck am I talking about? This is audio. So I was inside with my family, which I did not have before, which I didn't have when I was originally doing this podcast. So now I have a family, and we were watching Jared from Subway, the docuseries, and I don't know what the fuck it was, but something about it had me spiraling. I had to turn it off, go outside, be alone. I even felt triggered enough to reach out to a sexual assault hotline, which is called, it's run by the organization called RAINN, RAINN, I think, founded by Tori Amos. I want to talk about the Three of Swords today. And the Three of Swords is probably the most prominent visually in the Rider-Waite deck. If you lay out all the cards and you put them in a big poster, right, and you can see all of them equal size, that one just pops out. It has this big red heart in the center that takes up almost the whole card. Very simple. Three swords piercing through it. And in short, this is often the card of betrayal, the card of the love triangle. Is it a love triangle if you're betrayed? Is it a love triangle if you're molested by your stepdad? I don't know. I don't think so. But it relates to the Three of Swords. So it's not only a huge betrayal to be molested by your stepdad, but also to be thrown under the bus by your mother, who knows about it. That's like the weirdest heartbreak, you know. It's like realigns your DNA, you know. When I think about my mom, you know, I already did an episode about that, so skip. But as we were watching this stupid documentary, I only say stupid because I never thought an icon like Jared from Subway would bring me to my knees with earth-shattering regret and soul-crushing confusion. You watch these shows and these people get to tell the world about some sick, sad shit that happened to them. And I'm here in a life that I've worked hard to create a space of safety, a space of love, you know, to have a family and security and trust and all that. And somehow, you know, the combination of events and interviews and context, and I'm suddenly just rewind back into the shell of some scared little girl. And the thing about sexual assault, the thing about betrayal, the thing about the Three of Swords is there's the initial piercing of the heart. You know, there's an event, an act that happens. But when it comes out the other side, it's going a different direction. You know, it's something that ends up changing you, and you can't help but to have this echoing that keeps going and going and going. You know, and it's if you look straight down the line, I like to think of the minor arcana is sitting right under the major arcana. So three is the Empress, you know, the abundance, the creativity, the endlessness. So that applies to the Three of Swords. There's sort of an endless abundance of creative torture and pain that keeps happening, you know, after the event. And some of its medicine underneath it too, I think, is relevant. Like the swords and the cups, I think, are helpful to each other. You know, the cup is a nice sheath for the sword to like temper it, cool it down, offer it some space to be received without cutting or hurting. And the Three of Cups in the tarot, I connect to going out with people who are your peers and communicating and sharing your hearts and being heard and hearing and sharing and receiving. So maybe that's what I'm attempting here now. I guess I'm just talking in circles, but you know, the thing is, I need somebody to talk to about it. And sometimes as you grow older, you start to understand the levity of your pain and the burden that sometimes brings to others, even people, and especially people that really care about you. When I was younger, I was such a fucking, I don't know, loud mouth. Like I was, in my way, I just felt like it was like radical activism, like way before Me Too. When I was in high school, I would make comics and publish them in the school newspaper about sexual assault and make paintings and talk about it really openly, because I felt like the major thing that made the pain worse was having to keep it inside. And that extends into the pain of being cheated on, the pain of being betrayed by a best friend, the pain of being sold out by a business partner. You know, there's different ways this can manifest, and it's not to say that we have to line all of our pain up and bring out a yardstick and figure out which one is the worst or the most valid. You know, it's all fairly relative to your experiences. And in my experience, I feel like the programming that happened in my little head when my stepfather would come into my room at night while my mom was at work bartending, and I would just shut down like a robot, you know, pretend I was dead. Whatever the fuck that was, it put a little maze in my brain of a certain kind of conduct. And I think that if it weren't for that, I wouldn't have had relationships later with people who were liars, manipulators, cheaters, you know. And in some cases, I feel like, and I'm not going to speak for everyone because I'm not everyone. I'm myself, and I don't want to get grandiose and overarching statements for all people, but in some ways, it's like the dark matter, the dense, invisible, evil force that holds that moment in time. And if I imagine that I had to re-experience the physical moment again, it's just like plug your nose and like swallow it down and be done with it, you know? It's over. Goodbye. Fuck it. But there's something surrounding it that is so hard to explain. Just this evil, goopy jelly that just sticks on you forever. And, I mean, can we call that CPTSD, PTSD, whatever, you know? But it stays with you, and it's the echoing of the conditions that you were in. So, for example, I just made a pot roast for my family, and I made a big-ass pot roast, like, in a Dutch oven, and the broth originally, right after I cooked it, wasn't very thick, but it had been in the fridge for 2 days, and I was like, I want to eat the leftovers, right? I go in, and it had become almost like a stew. It just been sitting in the fridge, and the juice has changed, everything around it. So it's harder to find, like, the carrot inside of the broth or whatever, because it's become so much thicker and more opaque. And I guess the carrot in this case would be the actual assault, the actual moment. And then after a while, it just starts simmering in its own juices and saturating and marinating. And then it becomes this everything else, the air you breathe. I think out of all of the times that I was cheated on, one of the most epic was one of my first boyfriends. And he was someone I met when I was 13, coincidentally, while I was being abused towards the end of my abuse at home. And he just, I don't know, like, something about him seemed really magical. He was older. He was a senior in high school. I mean, not a senior, sophomore, sorry. Still pretty big red flag. Come on. I'll tell you what, I was once a sophomore in high school, and I definitely wasn't going to fucking middle schools looking for dates. Okay. And I know that there's, like, a boy or girl thing, say what you want, whatever, but just think about being in your own little shoes and taking those steps. Seems weird, right? So anyway, that's when I met him. And a couple years later, he started writing me love notes on AIM, America Online Instant Messenger. And I fell in love. I had never been love bombed before. So to me, it felt like a magical experience. You know, of course it did. I was young. It was probably, at that time, I was 15. It was a couple years later, as I said. So he was already graduated from school and had moved north. I think he was in Portland, maybe Seattle. I don't remember. So he started driving down to visit me all the way in Woodland, California, Yolo County. You only live once. He would come down there and stay at my aunt's house. I was living with my aunt and her kids. She was a single mom and a registered nurse and worked really hard. And she was really fun and kind. And I started living there because I was living in a dilapidated building before that. And it was just so unbearable. I hated it so much that I asked my aunt if I could live with her. And I brought my sister. So we were staying there. And, you know, it started to feel a little, I mean, I felt physically cleaner. I didn't have to take the back stairs down the alley between these two crappy bars to take a shower in the basement. You know, like, it was more convenient to use the bathroom, and there was windows and clean clothes and regular food. I remember my aunt saying that she could tell I was in a weird way. I don't know, because I would hide food in my mattress, which I don't remember, but she would say I'd get some crackers or a power bar, and you'd always hide little stashes of food in your bed. Not just eating it openly, rolling up the bag and putting it in the back of the pillowcase. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I don't remember that, but sounds accurate. So anyway, that's the state I was in, when I started getting these messages that were like, I love you, and without you, I would die. And most of it was song lyrics, and he thought that I didn't know who Placebo was or something, so he would just send me these fucking song lyrics. And but I was really moved by it, and so it ended up feeling like this really epic destined relationship. And he would break up with me and get back with me. And I remember the first time I had sex with him, I was probably 15. And it felt disgusting. I felt so fucked up. It felt wrong. I felt like I was being used. It was creepy. Afterward, he rolled over with his back to me and didn't want to touch me. And I was like, ugh. I feel gross. What the fuck did I just do? I'm so, my little coaching ass bitch, dirty, you know? I hated it. And then I think the next day, or maybe 3 days later, it was a very long time ago, so my memory starts to crunch the files, pack them in there. So shortly after, I got this little, I don't even know, I think it was an acquaintance of mine that went to high school with me and the guy, and she was like, did you know that he had sex with his ex-girlfriend all week or weekend? Or right after I'd seen him, he went to go hang out with his ex-girlfriend at a hotel and they had sex all day, or I don't know. Anyway, I confronted him, and then I talked to her about it, and she confirmed it, and they both confirmed it, and I just felt like I had got punched in the gut. And basically it was this long on again, off again, dramatic fairy tale nightmare of being manipulated by this weird dude who would cheat on me and then tell me somehow it was my fault. And you know, I remember he would break up with me through text message. No, sorry, not text message. AIM instant messenger. That's how we talked. I didn't have a cell phone for a long time. And a lot of times when he would start a fight with me, he would end it with, fine, have a nice life. And that was his big fuck you. Have a nice life. I was like, oh my god, eye roll. Okay, thank you, I'll try, as long as you don't message me again. But he'd always come back and message me again. And now that I understand narcissistic abuse patterns, there's the love bombing, there's the back and forth, and then there's, you know, kind of keeping you around in a way after devaluing you enough to feel like you need to finish the story by going back with them to clear something up, but you'll never finish the story. You'll never clear it up. So I didn't talk to that little fucker for I don't know, several years, maybe 5 years, which, seems like a lot longer time when you're younger. I'll tell you that. It seemed 10 years now, you know? And then when we, reunited, I don't know. It was the same. It was the love bombing bullshit. And, I just thought he was kind of cheesy when I met him again. And when I was younger, he felt so cool to me because he was older. and, you know, he played guitar or whatever. And I don't know what I was fucking thinking. But he seemed like a goober when I saw him again. You know, he was kind of wearing the same shit that he wore last time I saw him. And I was like, here's a specimen who has not evolved, you know. Like listening to the same Screamo CD in your, you know, Jetta, which is now a Tesla. Like, can you say cornball, you know? Anyway, which is not to say that anyone who's doing that is a cornball, but to me, it was just like, this person has not grown at all, you know? This person is like a caricature of themselves, and they think they're fucking cool, but they're enslaved to these little sketchy outlines of cool they made when they were like 17. Like, get over it, you know, move on, grow, expand. Anyway, I guess I'm getting a little sidetracked. So I started seeing him again, and then he tells me he's married, and I'm like, what the fuck? fuck, you know? And then I said, I don't want to have anything to do with you. And then he kept messaging me and messaging me that he was separated. And I think, you know, I think it's just like, I don't know, like, you buy into this bullshit. And I think that a lot of times people who become manipulated by these walking red flag assholes that everyone is like, that asshole, oh my god, what are you thinking? Because people said that to me, oh my god, what the fuck are you thinking? And I was like, well, you know, it seems very you don't get it, or whatever the fuck you think. You can't think clearly because it's not the front of your mind that's doing the work of putting you in that situation. It's like this back of your mind programming, because you've already been in that situation, and it's the situation you grew up with. And it seems like, you know, it seems like when you're in, let's say, when you're in New Jersey and you're like, okay, cool, let's walk around. None of these restaurants look familiar to me. Oh, a Mexican place? Let's go. That's like my home in California. I know that's food that I like. I'll go in there, and they bring you out a fucking burrito that has a green tortilla and ranch zigzag on the top of it, and you open it out with a fork and knife because you're like, I don't want to touch the ranch. The gross, what the fuck is happening? And it has white rice, green olives, and mozzarella cheese. And you're like, what the fuck is happening? I thought this was a familiar, safe place. It's not. It's bullshit. So, and by the way, I'm, that happened to me. I went to all tomorrow's parties with this little dude around this time that I'm talking about. We flew from California. We went to all tomorrow's parties. It was really fun. I loved it. I got to see, Neutral Milk Hotel, and Portishead, and anyway, I thought it was a cool show, fun to go with. But I think that I started waking up in that trip too, because we were driving somewhere. I think we were driving back to the hotel or to get food or something, and there was a bunch of cop cars with their sirens, and they were like taking up the street. There's so many of them, and they were just like zooming down the street. And as they were driving towards, you know, a passing direction, dude goes, where the fuck are they going in a hurry? And then right then a huge flock of crows fly by, and I was like, oh, they probably are investigating that murder no laugh or acknowledgement of my perfect joke. What a fucking crazy person. Who wouldn't think that was at least worth a little, huh, clever or whatever? It was like he was mad that I talked. Oh my God. Anyway, so I was feeling uncomfortable around this person, but I felt like I had to be around them, and I don't know why, you know, it's like this, the jelly, the thing that I was talking about, you know, the broth that thickens over time and you can't see the carrot anymore. That was ever so present. You know, that uncomfortable shit feeling that I felt at home my whole life. Putting myself in a familiar position of trying to be light and positive and flexible and considerate of someone moody. And then he abruptly broke up with me, abruptly got with me again. And then we went to the show a couple months later after all tomorrow's parties, I guess. But we were going out again, and we went to the show, and it was at a big warehouse, and there was rattlesnakes in the bar, and I remember not having any money, and I asked the bartender if I could have a free drink if I told him a joke or something. I don't remember how I got a free drink, but I got a drink, and I was like, okay, cool. Like, I feel so alienated and weird here. It's kind of not my scene. The guy that brought me here is like ignoring me the whole time and talking to this other lady, and it's making me really uncomfortable. And I was drinking this beer, and like I just started making friends and feeling more comfortable, and then I started feeling a little drunk, and I'm looking at this like the fattest, stumpiest rattlesnake I've ever seen in my life, and thinking like, I want that rattlesnake power. Like, I want that fast venom, like the sudden lightning bolt to just hit me so I understand what the fuck I'm doing here and I can get over it. And so I go into the next room. It's about time to leave. And the guy is like flirting with this girl. And I was like, are you guys dating? Like, what's going on? And she kind of rolled her eyes, and he was like, oh, you're so embarrassing. Let's leave. And as we were leaving, I felt this tremendous shove on my back, and it threw me down, and I skinned the palms of my hands and my knees, and I was bleeding. And this dude's friends were driving by, and they're like, oh, is she okay, dude? And he was like, oh, yeah. And then he was, like, trying to pick me up by my hands that had open wounds. And I was like, don't touch my hands. Oh, my God. And he just started yelling at me in the car about how it was embarrassing and stupid. And he never wanted to see me again. And I was like, okay, like, likewise. And then I just, like, took a long shower, walked into my room, put on the radio, heard a Lana Del Rey song for the first time, started crying on the floor in the dark, like, oh yeah, okay, I feel this. A couple weeks later, he's like, well, I think there was just a misunderstanding, trying to get back with me, right? And I was like, I don't know. And that's usually when I had the best treatment, was after he had been shitty to me, and then when he was coming back and trying to convince me that he really cares about me and we're destined to be together. And I was in the space of being like, oh, I don't know. So he'd have to prove that he meant it. So that was, you know, of course, clearly when he was the nicest. So he was being very nice to me, but I was like, I'm not sure. There's something about this that feels wrong. And that week I heard there was going to be this Venus eclipse over the sun. which is this rare astrological event. And I went, and I think it was, you know, it was during the day because the sun's out. I went into the room in my house that had the most sunlight during the eclipse. At the time, I was subletting an apartment, and I had the space all to myself, and I just looked at the sun with the Venus, and I closed my eyes, and I meditated on what I needed to see, like, what needed to be revealed. And suddenly, like, my friend from middle school back in the day hits me up and is like, "Hey, are you dating this dude?" And I was like, "Yeah, why?" And she's like, "Me too." And then I found out he was dating that girl from the show that he was flirting with. And then I found out there was this other lady. And it just kept unraveling. And I was like, "Okay, you're fucking pathetic." And then he was like, "Well, what'd you expect? Blah, blah, blah." And I was like, "Listen, you're like a shell of a human being. Like, you're just like this horrible, empty person that keeps trying to crawl into other people so that you feel human again. But you're just going to be like cursed to roam this world, hurting people and never feeling like an actual person." And he was like, "Oh, is that supposed to be a hex or something?" Because he thought I was hilarious that I was a tarot reader. Like, I'm so pathetic and delusional, you know? And I was like, it's not a hex for me. It's like something you've already done to yourself. And that's where I'm going to put a pin in that, because that's where it ended for me. Or so I thought, because like 10 years later, I get a message from my friend from middle school, Tiana. She says, "Oh my God, do you remember that girl that dude cheated on you and me with?" And I was like, "Well, you make it sound like we were like, we're okay that we were being cheated on at all." But I mean, it's also relative. When I think about that fucking joke of a relationship, I'm like, cheated on, ugh, like, eh, whatever, you know, take him, get out of here. So anyway, she told me that she started talking to this girl because the dude never left her alone and she kept letting him back into her life. And I'm like, "Tiana, you know better. What the fuck are you thinking?" And she was like, "You know, it was fun, whatever." And so she got a bunch of Dixie pics of him. I don't know why I said it that way. It's so incredibly, terribly cringe. I'm so sorry. You know what I'm talking about. She got pictures of his wiener and sent them to his live-in girlfriend that he had been with since 10 years ago or whatever. And she was telling me how this girl was devastated, or this woman was devastated and freaked out. And I'm like, "Oh my God, give me her number or her email or whatever." Like, I just feel so bad for her, because like, this guy is like the worst, you know? He really gets into your fucking head and he makes you feel like shit. I'm like, if she's been living with this guy, oh my God, like, I want to call an ambulance for her or something. He's just so toxic. So I reached out to her and I was like, "Hey, you don't know me. I'm sorry if this is creepy, but I heard that this happened and I want you to know that this person is really manipulative and they're probably somehow making it your fault. And if you want someone to talk to who knows how abusive they are, I'm here for you." And then she reached back and we became friends. It was really beautiful, actually, to be able to show up for someone who needed an advocate in such a creepy situation, and knowing what that felt like, having been in that particular narcissist's abuse ray. So anyway, please excuse my heavy breathing. I am now an asthmatic, which is a story for another day. And I would like to say that concludes my experience with manipulators, but it doesn't. I dated another guy after him that was a liar. He told me he had cancer, and then I don't know how I found out, but like maybe it was through stupid, oh, I think it was through Twitter. Yeah. He made a post, and these people were posting weird things, and then this girl posted this thing to me, and then we started like an actual support group online. There was like 9 different girls in there talking about the abuse that they had endured from this dude, and I was like, oh my god, you know. And I think I didn't have that level of shit to deal with from someone I was dating until basically much more recently, like probably 4 or 5 years ago. I dated someone really briefly that again was like, I want to marry you. And I was like, get away from him. I'm feeling like Charles Manson vibes. But for some reason, I couldn't step away. And then, you know, after a couple months, I'm like, cut it off. What am I fucking thinking? Part of me was like, this is interesting. I'm bored. This is funny to me. Or what? I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. But there's something very, you know, there's something about that type of abuse that really hits the serotonin, you know, it like, or not even just the oxytocin. And, you know, what the fuck am I talking about? I'm not a scientist. I am not a scientist. I'm not a licensed therapist. I'm just a woman who's had a lot of shitty boyfriends. But I will say there's something about a certain kind of manipulation, like fog dust, that like becomes a little bit addictive, and you don't want to admit it because you're like, I'm smart, I don't need anything, but then you just get this little huff and you're like, oh, okay, I could take it or leave it or whatever, like, but you keep coming around because you just need a little hit, you know what I'm saying? So I need to own that. Because I'm a grown-ass woman and I should have known better. But, you know, by the time I cut it off, it had been a couple months. And then he wouldn't stop fucking reaching out. And I'd be like, can you please stop? Can you please stop? Walking him. And then he would find me on Instagram. And then I would block him. And then 2 days later, he would have a new Instagram account. And I would have to block him again. And again. And again. And again. After 3.5 months of this, I got so very tired. I put a comment under one of his pictures and his new profile that he had made. And I said, how many women are you doing this to? He deletes it. So I just rewrote it exactly as is, reposted it, knowing that he would see it and think that, oh, I already got that notification. Already took care of it. Already deleted it. But before he could catch on and delete it again, 2 women private messaged me. And they're like, oh yeah, this is happening to me. You know, again, thank God for the 3 of cups showing up for you when you're having the 3 of swords. Because it is a good medicine. It does help heal to talk about it, to hear someone else's pain, to relate, to put a place in your heart for someone else and have compassion for them, and, you know, allow yourself to have compassion for yourself, to help another person, you know, and all of that really hits the spot, you know. So yeah, I think that it could be like one of those things that is going to be forever interesting to me, perhaps. I hope not. I'm just speculating, because when I think about, like, there is an addictive quality to finding these people that supply you with this little love bomb huff, you know? But on top of that, it also intensifies the baggage, the broth, you know, the steeping in that PTSD nightmare where you're not casting out that maze that was put in your brain as a small child that is keeping you encased within yourself, within this particular paradox or problem. It's not letting you feel free. And maybe freedom shouldn't be just being completely annihilated and having no past memories or wisdom that you inherit through experience. Maybe freedom is to play every role and experience all that shit and have accountability and still have free will at the end of the day. Okay, so thanks for listening. I do feel better. And I'm going to go inside and go see my family. Sending love to everyone out there. And just know that the Three of Swords is in the story of tarot for a reason. It's a part of all of our lives in some extent, you know. It may not look like that to you, you know. Maybe my story isn't the universal story, but it's probably more common than one might expect. Sending so much love, and I hope that when you have your Three of Swords experience, you can find your Three of Cups and get it off your chest, and also hear others, so you know you're not alone in this world. Goodbye.